5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's Sunday, and you know what that means, Croc Nation. Another episode of the Croc Podcast. To my left, Angel Santana. I can't say on my left in the flesh, but on my left technologically and in our Zoom world. Angel Santana, how are you?
Happy Sunday. Happy Zoom Day.
Happy Zoom Day. So this is a great opportunity for us. As you know, most of the time we're together on site, but sometimes life happens. Our little beautiful Ariel had a flu this week, had a little fever, a little childhood virus. She is on the mend, I understand.
Yes, and I probably gained about 10 pounds stress eating. So yeah.
PTL, praise the Lord. Thank God. What is your go-to stress food, my friend?
Chips, man. Chips and dip.
Okay, so you don't go Spanish. You don't go rice and beans.
No, because to me, that's not stress food. That's a gourmet.
Yeah, that's almost like you. That's just your home comfort food.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Angel, let me ask you a question, getting in today's podcast, since you never know what I'm going to come up with. What's one of my favorite themes? And we really haven't developed this module yet, and we're going to start putting a little oomph into it. But what is one of the pillars that we stand behind in the Croc Podcast?
Well, I know that one of the things that we both agree on is that our goal is to try to, you know, touch one person's life. And if we can do that once per episode, we have done our job.
Absolutely. But one of the things I think we're really proud of, one of our pillars is breaking down the wall and trying to help patients determine not what we want to give them in their caregiver, but what they want in their caregiver. And that's the module we're going to start to put on steroids and start to pump up a little bit. And today's episode is Who's That Guy in the Jersey? That's the name of today's episode. So two quick stories. I know you like stories, Angel.
I love stories.
So I am taping today from home, and I do believe this is my home. I know I pay for it every month. I know that I've fixed it up. I know that I take out the trash. So this is kind of my home. But to be honest with you, before it was my home, it was the home of a very dear man by the name of Bruno and his wife, Sally. Bruno lived out here in the country, had a nice 11-acre farm out here, really enjoyed his retirement, came from Union County, New Jersey with Sally and had many, many great years and actually even decades in this house. And one day, Bruno went to his doctor and his PSA was a bit elevated. And his doctor sent him to a urologist, and the urologist did a biopsy, and the biopsy was positive for cancer. And back in the day, back in the 1990s, when Bruno came in to see me, we were in the basement of the old Horton Hospital. It was kind of like the Munster's house, right? It was this big castle that was old and decrepit, and the basement was scary. And Bruno was down in the basement because that's where radiation oncology departments usually were housed in those days, in the basement. And Bruno is walking down the hallway, down this cavernous long hallway, because the basement really was the size of the entire hospital, if you can imagine, without much in the way of walls. And I had looked at my schedule that day, and I was seeing the name Bruno, one of my Italian friends. And this little old man is walking down the hall with his beautiful wife. And I'm screaming down the hall. Here's this husky, big guy with a full beard. And my beard at the time was dark. And I had long hair. And I'm wearing this jersey. And I'm screaming at the top of my lungs, "You look like your name is Bruno." And I'm screaming. And Bruno stepped back and he goes, "Oh, my God, who is this guy?" And I said, "You're not going to believe it, but I'm your doctor." And Bruno started laughing, and I started laughing, and his wife Sally started laughing. And to make a long story short, we became fast friends. He really was one of the first three members of the Croc organization. I don't know if you remember from the Beth, the Beth podcast, when we talked about that first lunch, and then the first two ladies were Beth and Mary, and the third Croc member was Bruno. And yes. Bruno became so close to me. He was almost my surrogate father, and he was generous to the organization, but not just generous in money, but generous in his time. And everybody loved Bruno, and he went to all the events. And Bruno and Sally were kind of like the grandfather and grandmother of Croc, and everybody kind of fell in love with him. And then fast forward, you know, another 10 years, and, you know, Bruno's starting to lose it, and Sally's becoming a bit forgetful, and their children put them in a nursing home together. And my wife was in school at the time. She was going for her master's degree up at Dartmouth. And we were spending most of our time up in Dartmouth. I was there on the weekend. She was there full time. And when she graduated in 2010, we had no place to live, right? Because we had sold the other house, and she was up there for a year. I was crashing on my mother's sofa for that year and driving up to New Hampshire on the weekends. And I just had this thought, and I thought, you know, Bruno's house is empty. Let me call Bruno's, you know, daughter and see what's going on. And I called Laura, and lo and behold, we called to see if they were interested in renting the house. As it so happened, the house was for sale, and we basically bought the house. So this house is Bruno's house, and that all generated from that meeting in that cavernous hallway where this big husky doctor with a big, you know, big head of black hair, curly hair, and this big black beard wearing a jersey comes up and gives him a big hug and says, and I said, I'm going to be your doctor. And he started laughing at me like, are you kidding me? Where is the exit? How can I get out of this place? Second story I want to tell you is more recently, maybe within the last 2 years. And again, my whole jersey, you know, wearing process, and we've talked about why, to try to break down that wall for our patients. There was a woman who came in for a very, you know, serious cancer, and she had an anxiety disorder, and she was already nervous to boot. And then her mental illness kind of was sort of percolating, or I would say just simmering pretty high on the stove. And the navigator was in the room, and the nurses were in the room. And as soon as I stepped foot in the room, I mean, I didn't even have a chance to do any of my shtick. I just literally got one foot in the room, like when Ariel put one of her feet in the ocean, right? And then she ran away, I'm sure. Soon as that one foot landed in the room, she looked at me and she said, no, 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 no. Like Ariel does with Have Faith, Let It Begin. No, 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 no. This is not going to work. 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 No, 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 no. Because she looked at me and I was not what she was expecting. So why am I telling you these two stories? Because the whole process of what do patients want from their caregivers, I don't even think they know really what they want from their caregivers. So we have to help them find out what it is they want. And this paper that we're going to be talking about today really hit home, because the name of the paper is What Do Patients Want from Their Radiation Oncologist? And it's the initial results from a prospective trial. And we're going to get into the details of that paper in a second. But let's talk a little bit about that whole process of what you want from a caretaker. So we've already had an episode or two on this module. But if you think about it, this is very important as far as just that initial reaction, that initial sort of jumping into the water and hitting that cold water, that rush, that surge of energy, that adrenaline push, like when you're meeting your doctor for the first time. What is it that you're expecting? What do you expect from that experience? What do you expect from that visit? And there are, as I said a million times, one of the backbones of the podcast is taking into account the special considerations of our survivors. So they're afraid, they have a very scary disease, a very aggressive disease, a disease that does things to them that no other disease does. And then our treatments are so toxic, and there's the side effects and things like that. So already we have special circumstances. This paper also hit home to me because it's a radiation oncology paper. It was from the Red Journal, and it's a very old paper. It goes back to 2007, and for some reason I kept this paper because, as I said, even back in 2007, this paper spoke to me. was because of the fact radiation oncologists, and on this podcast with Croc Nation, I really try to be non-denominational, not just in gender, not just in race, not just in spirituality or belief, but in, you know, sexual preference or whatever. It's really all about equality, and it's all about, you know, the entire human experience. I don't put radiation oncology on top of anything or try to promulgate its greatness above surgical oncology or medical oncology, even though I'm a radiation oncologist. But we do have one special difference that the other two oncologists don't have. And that's during that period of time when a patient is under treatment, we get to see them every day. So we're seeing them physically daily, and we develop these relationships. So a study that was done on the radiation oncology side is very relevant in the sense that we have a really good feel for what it is, that information that we can glean from our patients to help them to bring out some data to help the industry, to help our vocation, our fellow colleagues in oncology know what it is to be that better caretaker. And we already have hit on the subject of doctors' general indoctrination, excuse the pun there, of being very, very detached, being very, you know, untouchable with that big wall between us. And really, is that really what the patients want? And this paper was one of the first, at least from the radiation oncology side, to try to explore whether that was true or not. So we talked about the special considerations and the circumstances. And then I guess my joke of the podcast is that sometimes I feel as a doctor, that sort of a peripheral doctor, I always call us the Navy, right? Because you have the surgeons are the Marines and the medical oncologists are the Navy SEALs. And then you have us, you know, we're kind of like the knucklehead sailors that are just kind of, you know, gutting around the ocean on these cool little boats and power sailing and ski diving or what is water surfing and all that kind of stuff. But the truth of the matter is we're in a really interesting position because we get to hear all the little stories. So like, if you think about it, like the little blue haired ladies in the beauty parlor, it's like, oh, Dolores, you don't know what my neighbor did yesterday. He dug this hole to try to kill the woodchucks. You know, he built this 5-foot wall to kill the woodchucks, or, oh my God, that baby never stops crying next door. Can you believe that beautiful woman married that guy? You know, you know, and you're in the beauty parlor. And, or for the guys, I'm a non-gender specific podcaster here. We're in Buffalo Wild Wings. Guys, you're no better than those little biddies in the beauty parlor. You know, talking about complaining about your wives and they're complaining about you guys. And, you know, we get to hear all these complaints and, you know, what are some of these complaints, Angel? Help me, you know, as a patient, what are some of your criticisms of, you know, some of your encounters with your caregivers?
I think it's, you know, we've touched base on this a lot. So it almost, I hate to say, it sounds like a broken record. We don't want it to be, but I think really it's the bedside manner. For me, number one, I think you have to be able to relate well with your patient, know your patient, but also when you're explaining what is happening, you know, I don't want to use the term, but, you know, dumb it down, but you have to be able to articulate your words properly so that they were not misinterpreted or confused. Because when you walk out of a room after your doctor has explained everything or is explaining, you don't want to walk out with more questions, right? You want to have your questions answered and feel that your questions are just as important so that when you do ask them, he or she is prepared to actually answer them. You know, we talked about this a couple episodes ago where my mother was in the doctor's office, right? And she wanted, he diagnosed her and she didn't know how to actually spell it. So she asked him if he could write it down for her. And he says, well, we're going to mail it to you. I don't have time for that.
Yes, I remember that story you told me. Yeah.
Yeah. So
I think he did great, actually. I came up with a couple of things, but you pretty much hit every one of them. So the things that I hear the most in my office are, you know, my oncologist, they're not listening to me. They're not giving me enough time. It appears that they don't really care. They're not returning my calls. They're not giving me the results of my testing. They're not communicating effectively with me. I'm not understanding what they're saying. They're using big words. They're not helping me to understand. They're not teaching me. They're not making me feel safe. They're not making me feel cared for. My needs are not being met, and not just my medical needs, but my emotional needs, my psychological needs. Even I'll go so far as saying my spiritual needs are not being met by my oncologist. And these are the things that I'm hearing. So when we talk about this module, as far as what do you want in your caregiver, and we look at some of the data, you know, I think that that's what we're trying to do, is we're trying to break down that wall. This is our first pillar, you know, of CROC, of Citizens Reunited to Overcome Cancer, trying to empower you survivors to know what you're deserving of. So we want to put out there and bring the data to support what we're saying, to foster, now I'm going to use the word, I'm going to say it seven times, appropriate, trusting, caring relationships. I'd go so far as even calling it friendships with our patients. We want to destroy their isolation. We want to destroy the miscommunication. We want to destroy the non-communication. And by doing this, by knowing what it is that they really want, what makes them feel comfortable, we will improve the outcomes, how they do, their survival, how they perform, how they respond to treatment. Now, there is data, significant scientific data, supporting the improvement of outcomes through the fact that if your patient likes you and trusts you and believes in you, they have more of a tendency to be more compliant with their regimen. They'll complete their treatments, they'll do their treatments, they'll come in for their treatments, and they won't be knuckleheads and not do that. They'll be less inclined to do that if they don't like you or don't trust you or don't feel that you care. And there is also unproven by science, another intangible that I truly believe in my heart and heart of hearts, that when you really feel loved and you really feel cared for, I really believe that your body will also respond better and you will have a better outcome. Now, I can't prove that scientifically yet. We're looking and scouring the earth for that data, but I believe there is an intangible quality as well. So let's talk a little bit. It's a really good segue to talk about the paper. Now, this paper, as I said, came out in 2007. I'm going to give you the name of the primary author. He's probably retired now. No, I'm only kidding. And I'm sadly going to butcher his name, but his name is Dr. A.J. Bhatnagar. And he's an MD, MBA from the University of Pittsburgh. And I'm not sure if he's still there, but the paper, as I said, what do patients want from their radiation oncologist? Initial results from a prospective trial. So let's talk a little bit about the paper. We'll dive deep into it. There were 182 patients, which is a good amount of patients, and they were split evenly between prostate cancer, breast cancer, and lung cancer. And I thought this was really brilliant reasoning, if you think about it. And I'm going to tell you why, because you wouldn't even be able to guess. But once I tell you, you'll say, oh, yeah, I do get it. If you take prostate cancer patients, they're always male. If you take breast cancer patients, they're mostly female. So you have a gender, you know, you have a gender bias for both prostate cancer and lung cancer. I'm sorry, breast cancer and prostate cancer. But when you throw in a lung component, that's sort of the one that sort of is used as the subset breaker, meaning that we want to know more about not just what men and women do, but what men and women do in different treatment sites or in the same treatment site. But you're not getting that in prostate and you're not getting that in breast, but you are getting that in lung. So let's take a look a little bit about that. And we're going to talk a little bit about the demographics. We'll get into that in a second, and then we'll go through the questions, the limitations, and the bottom line. So the way the study was done was all of these patients, 182 patients, were given preference surveys with 10 questions. I believe there were about 10 questions. We're going to actually go through them with either agree, being neutral, or disagree. Now back to the demographics. So the ages were generally about 65 years old, ranging from 35 to 89, and they were mostly female, 66% female, 34% male. The malignancies were breast 55%, lung 21%, and prostate 24%. One of the limitations of the study was because Western Pennsylvania demographics are mostly Caucasian, you know, that type of industrial, rural city, 78% of the patients were white. And again, that's one of the limitations of the study. And 76% of the patients were definitive treatments, which is fantastic, meaning being treated for cure, and 24% being palliative or trying to make quality of life better. The questions were as follows, and we'll go through each of them. And then I'm going to ask you, Angel, to participate. This is going to be participation time for you.
I love it. I love it.
What would you think? I know. What would you think the results would be? So question one, I would like my radiation oncologist to call me by my first name. Would you say that people would agree with this strongly, agree moderately, neutral, disagree moderately, or disagree strongly?
You know, I'm going to go against my gut. I'm going to just say neutral.
Okay. Absolutely agreed strongly. Patients okay. want to be known by their first
name. I wanted to say that, but I figured just...
Go with your gut, Angel.
Okay, I will go.
Always go with your gut.
Okay.
Number two, and this is right up my alley. Maybe this is the reason why I had this this paper hanging around my office for the last 14 years. I like my radiation oncologist to wear a white coat. Agree strongly, agree moderately, neutral, disagree moderately, disagree strongly.
Disagree strongly.
I wish that was the case. The truth is neutral. People really didn't care what we wore, well, which is good. That's for me. That's for what we're
I guess about. I'm basing that from you.
Yeah,
I,
no,
but I don't want to see
this. This is still good for us. This
yeah, I don't want to see you in a white coat. I like the
well,
way
what would have been scary for me because I have a couple of $1,000 in jerseys down in my basement that I wouldn't know what to do with would have been if they agree strongly, then I would be really up a creek without a paddle, right? So really the fact that it's a neutral response actually is very good for my cause, for our cause, for the Croc cause. Number three, if my doctor held my hand throughout any important discussion, that would make me feel that my doctor really cares about me.
I'm going to say neutral.
Okay. I'm going to table question number three and number five, because we're going to spend a little more time on those, because that's really the crux of this paper and what I think is really important stuff. Number four, I would prefer that my radiation oncologist wear professional clothing. Here's another one that I don't fall into that category.
Strongly agree.
Okay, cool. Actually, that's not true. They really don't care whether we're wearing... you know, in Armani, is that like a thing, in Armani suit, or whether we're wearing jeans and a pair of sneakers? It's neutral on that.
It's hard because our perception of professionalism is, you know, I didn't think of Armani. I'm thinking just looking dapper and ironed and, you know what I mean? And
are you saying that a person can't look dapper in a pair of jeans and a jersey?
No, but based on the question, I thought maybe the person, like there's some doctors that'll wear white coats
yes.
and they're wrinkled.
Yes. Not where they're dirty. And they're, yeah, no, I understand.
Well,
we're going to get into that. Number five, I'm sorry. Another question was, I would prefer that my radiation oncologist use everyday language to explain my treatments.
Oh, that's gotta be a total agree.
Correct. Agree strongly.
Yes. I got one right.
Yep. I would prefer my radiation oncologist to explain my radiation treatment in detail.
Agreed.
Yes. Agree strongly. I want my doctor to be honest with me about exactly what my chances of cure are and the average survival for people with my cancer.
Strongly agree.
Absolutely. I would feel comfortable talking about my religious beliefs with my radiation oncologist.
Strongly agree.
That's actually, it was split between agree strongly and neutral.
Really?
If I would feel uncomfortable if my radiation oncologist talked about his or her religious beliefs.
Oof. Neutral.
Neutral and agree strongly. So people, some people do feel uncomfortable and such. And that could be a cultural thing too.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, as I was actually going to bring this into the podcast, we service a very large Hasidic community in the Hudson Valley. And certainly there are cultural differences, you know, in the Orthodox culture as opposed to a non-Orthodox culture. I mean, there are times when I walk into a room, I do not offer my hand to a woman, you know, to a woman who's Orthodox. And I'm very respectful, of course. And when I examine a patient, it's, you know, all my patients are examined with a chaperone, but the husband has to excuse himself from the room. So these are all the cultural things that we have to take into consideration. So the hand-holding and the hugging could also be culturally influenced by your background or, you know, by your belief system. And then the other one that we'll do a deep dive on besides the one about hand-holding is if my radiation oncologist offered me a hug on the last day of treatment, it would make me feel uncomfortable. So let's talk about the hugs and let's talk about the hand-holding. So now this is just in this paper and then we're going to get, and then you know what I always do? I always do the bottom line. So let's talk about those two. So the way it works in this paper, the data, is that if the hand-holding and the hugging were, believe it or not, very gender-biased, meaning that there was a subset analysis and women felt much more comfortable than men with the hand-holding and the hugging. However, when you look at the men, again, we looked at the prostate and we looked at the lung because we wanted to have both. Men with lung cancer were much more in agreement with being comfortable with intimacy, with the hug and with the hand-holding than a man with prostate cancer. And the paper believes, and I believe this as well, that prostate cancer patients generally do very, very well, whereas lung cancer patients have, you know, at least in the day, they're doing much better now. But, you know, 14 years ago, you know, lung cancer, I don't want to say was a definite death sentence, but it was certainly a very strenuous cancer to try to treat, a real son of a bitch, if you allow me to use that curse word on our podcast, a real toughie. So I think lung cancer guys, scared out of their minds, would not only mind a hug, just like soldiers hug in a, you know, in a foxhole and teammates, you know, hug after a touchdown. There's a camaraderie that I believe was put forth. So as I always try to do, Angel, I try to always look at the bottom line and things, because in the Croc podcast, we're not interested in, we like to bring the literature to our community. We like to bring the data to our community, but we also like to try to make it practical and achievable and parse it out in digestible bites. And to me, it comes down to this. We want our doctors not to be robotic. We want them to be extemporaneous, meaning we want them to be able to be adaptable and flexible to the situation. We want them to adapt to what the patients are needing at that particular moment, whether it be humorous or whether it be serious, and we want them to be effective. In the course of just one consult with the same person, I sort of used the sine wave on my notes to kind of remind me that I've seen patients where I've started and they've been bawling their eyes out. Then I got them laughing. Then I got them scared again when we talked about consent. And then I got them laughing again. So even within one consult with one person, you might have to be so adaptable that you might have to be the professional, detached doctor one moment, and then the humorous, accessible doctor the next moment. You might need to take out a tissue one moment, or you might have to just take a step back and just answer questions or try to endure some anger. Sometimes patients project their anger at their disease or their situation at their healthcare team. Sometimes you need to put that hat on. Sometimes it's time to read a patient and know it's time that they need a hug and they need a support or a high five or a fist bump is the new high five and hug in the coronavirus times. But we want to really, what I'm trying to say, Angel, and I'm probably not saying it well, we want to engender a new age, new version, updated and improved empathetic doctor model that can be professional, but simultaneously caring and loving and devoted and engaged and prepared. We want to be what they call in football situational. So football players need to know how to react in each different situation. Again, not that anybody on the Croc in the Croc Nation are football fanatics, but if you're playing in the secondary, meaning if you're covering the receivers in football, and there's a certain read on the line, whether the tight ends are going to do X or Z, or somebody's pulling to the right or to the left, in each situation, you have to know where to go, what to do, who to block, who to tackle, who to help. And these are all situational aspects of teamwork. And I think that what this paper brings out for me is that we don't have to be the doctor that's a robot that says, we read this paper, so I'm going to give you a robotic hug. I am going to give you tissues. I am going to cry with you. I am going to laugh with you. I am not going to wear a white coat. I am going to wear a jersey. We are not going to do that. We want each physician, and I don't even want to confine it to physicians. We want each caregiver to look inside their own personalities, look inside of what they want to achieve in their jobs, in their work with survivors. What is it that they want, and how they can use their personality to try to make a better experience for the patient? Because the bottom line, Angel, is a better prepared patient, a more comfortable patient, a patient who feels safe, is a patient who will have a better outcome. And that is all I have to say on this matter, on this episode, from this amazing module. Angel Santana, have faith, let it begin. You have the mic. How about some comments?
Well, I mean, I think you hit a home run here today. I think that as a patient, we don't get a chance to hear this side of the story from a doctor's point of view. And I said it here once, I've said it many times. What separates the Croc podcast from many other medical shows that I have tried to research as your producer, you're never going to see someone more willing to humble themselves and put themselves out there to say, listen, there are things that we need to improve. There are things that we haven't improved. There are things that we have to break the fourth wall on. And that is why we do what we do. And that's why you do what you are, what you do. And that's why you are who you are. Case and to enclose that, every doctor has to find their niche. They have to find out who they are. You know, it's not always about the accolades. It's not always about, you know, whatever award you have on a wall, or how many patients you can see in a day. It's what you can bring to the patients so that they can walk out feeling good about the good things and even the bad things. So I think it's a great episode, especially since we're on Sunday. Football season is officially starting in a couple hours. Great way to pump everybody up to get football started. Great job today.
Awesome. Thank you, Angel. Gratitude exercises every week. Angel Santana, have faith. Let it begin. Angel, I was very touched by your series this week about your daughter's illness and how that affected you and how you humbled yourself and reached out for prayer. And I also want to tell you that I don't think it's a terrible thing if a physician prays with his patients. And I know that may not be popular, but I'll say that there is a doctor. His name is Frank Imbarato. He practiced primary care, general medicine in Washingtonville, New York. And he was a very, very devout Christian. He put his money where his mouth is. He would go and do mission work, and he would pray with his patients all the time. And I belonged to the Christian Medical Association for a while, and Frank was the president, and we would sit down, and I would just have so much admiration for Frank, because it really takes a lot of guts for a doctor to go out there and see a patient who is afraid and scared and have the guts, and I really mean that, have the guts to ask if a patient wants to pray. And as I said, not everybody's going to want that. Some people might be off put or put off or whatever. But I just wanted to kind of say that in accolade to you, Angel, because really, you know, even though we laugh about Angel versus the world and about Frigidaire and about your woodchucks and all that type of thing, you know, it really is about our human connectedness and our relationship with the universe and our creator. So thank you, Angel, for a beautiful podcast. I hope that all the Croc Nation listens to you. And what I love about your podcast, it's not like mine, 8 hours long every week. versus like, you know, 12 minutes, 14 minutes, 8 minutes on subjects that really range. Why don't you tell, we have a few minutes today. Why don't you tell everybody about how they can listen to your podcast and tell us a little bit about the Have Faith, Let It Begin podcast.
I will, but I would like to start off by showing the Croc Nation how they can help us help them by promoting us within our Croc Nation community. There's a lot of friends and family out there. This is very simple. Well, you have many ways you can listen to us. If you're not a person that has an Android or an Apple phone, but you have a home computer, you can go on to the actual Croc podcast website. So it's an easy way to go. It's www.crocvip.com. Take a look in there. All the episodes are up. All the descriptions are up there. If you're a person that likes to do a little bit of social media, guess what? All you have to do is subscribe to the Croc Nation, even on Twitter. We're still giving away books, by the way. Those books haven't been, we have a whole box full of books. And I'm not even going to say anything other than you have to find the episode. If you find the episode, I'm not going to even tell you what the episode is because then I'm giving it away. Go on to the Croc podcast, take a look at the episode. I'll give you a hint. The doctor's name may start with an A. May start with, you know, I think I give it away. But the bottom line is it's at Croc VIP. That's Twitter. Subscribe. Tell us you want a copy of the book and you get one. It's that easy. Have Faith, Let It Begin is pretty easy. I've been blessed to be in your presence, Dr. E, and become good friends with you because we share the same common goal. We try to touch the life of somebody each and every day. Whether it's your version of it with the medical field or mine is spiritually, motivationally, or personal testimony. Your show, Sundays, 9 a.m. I am weekdays, 7:30 a.m. live. And I think that what we're both doing will touch lives. And I'm going to pause there because I know you were going to say it. So I'm just going to segue and let you have the last word. Of course, you know, being today, September 12th, yesterday was a very important day for many people. And we would be wrong to not end our episode today by, you know, showing our gratitude and respects to all those that, you know, lost a loved one for 9/11 and all those that are still mourning the loss and all the children that are now at a certain age where they unfortunately are understanding more and more and are missing their fathers, aunts, uncles, grandparents. You know, we stand by you as well. And we say, you know, God be with you and a lot of prayers your way.
Oh, Angel, that was beautiful. I really appreciate that. And I have nothing to add to that beautiful sentiment. And Rod Freeman, Small Biz Up, thank you, Rod. Michael John Benzea, Charlotte, thank you. We love you. Thank you for believing in us. And I end each podcast the same. Which is good because I have a very simple mind, but it is very sincere and genuine and from my heart. So on behalf of Angel Santana and your friend, Tommy Anelli, your cancer survivorship bus driver, we wish you a very long, healthy, happy, and cancer-free life. God bless you. God be with you. God bless America. We adore you. Until next week. Peace.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Croc Podcast, available to you every Sunday at 9 a.m. Don't forget, we have a social media outlet all designed for you to interact with us. You can visit us at our Facebook page, Croc VIP. You can interact with us on our Twitter account, at Croc VIP. And if you want to get a chance, take a look at the website, all designed by Small Biz Up. It is website www.crocvip.com. On behalf of Dr. Tom Ianelli, we'll see you next week for another episode of the Croc Podcast.